Coming up, the Brooklyn Nets battled against Philadelphia, coming up just short. But as is with every game in the absence of Kevin Durant, there is far more positives coming out of this one than negatives. We break down the performances of Nicholas Claxton, of Seth Curry, and yes, we will discuss one Ben Simmons, all coming up next.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yes, my friends, it is the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. Over there, you're going to find Doug Norrie, owner and operator of DFSR, for all your daily fantasy sports rankings from DraftKings to FanDuel and on YouTube. He's got you covered. I'm Adam Arbrick, breaking down New York football giants on the One Giant podcast with my boy Andy Mack. We thank you for making us your first listen of the day, free on all those great platforms, and let you know, today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. And Doug, we get started, as I think we've done in the absence of Kevin Durant, said at the top, feeling mostly good about a game where you lose by four and put up 133 points against the 76ers. I'm feeling good on this one. I'm not going to get brought down.
It's tough to let up 137 hung on you and still walk away from the game being like, hey, not too bad. Not too bad. But that's kind of had this. That's how this game really felt. Like, really from the beginning, it felt like playoff basketball. It was super chippy. We'll get into some of the examples of that, which there were many in this game. This felt like a rivalry, as it should be, considering the personnel that are in this game and even not playing. I mean, Durant tweeted his way through this one. I don't know if you're following Durant, but he was tweeting like at Joel Embiid about
didn't appreciate that celebration,
saying that he missed talking to him and Trez. I mean, except for the part where no one played any defense, this was really, really had all the feel of that. The crowd was way into it. They were all over Simmons, and it was just a fun game to watch. Even though there was times in the first quarter where I was fully convinced the game would never actually end. Like, once we got away from that, it was a long one, but it didn't lack for entertainment. So we'll go through some of the stuff. We'll go through why, you know, we're not coming out of this one. I don't think Nets fans are either. I think people can be pretty realistic about this, about why it's hard to be too down about this loss, because really for all the other things that happened to it, you walk away thinking, hey, I can draw a lot of positives from this.
And you said too, that playoff kind of energy, which I think was at least more than a regular season game. I don't think quite escalate there, because usually it's the defensive end where that's what gives you the playoff vibes, is a little more physicality. But you had Kyrie Irving. He kind of took those little passing shots about guys that want to be here. You have James Harden saying, yeah, this is my best opportunity that I've had to win a championship. Hop right over his time with Brooklyn when discussing OKC and other places like Houston. And then you had Montrezl Harrell saying, yeah, Kyrie Irving is the head of the snake for the Nets. We don't really care about what Claxton's going to do, and he's not really a problem for us to worry about. So all those things led to, you had Claxton getting into it a little bit with Joel Embiid. You had him getting into a little bit with Montrezl Harrell. You had Kyrie Irving, who's usually a pretty passive guy in the game. You know, he kind of brushes it off a lot like Kevin Durant will, but he seemed to have a little bit of what's the vibe here, fellas? Thought we're all just trying to play a game of basketball. So it did give you that kind of energy where I was pleasantly surprised.
You have Joel Embiid, who almost hip thrusted his way through into the upper tier of the loge section. I mean, like,
well, it was
like Michael Scotted that thing.
And I always say, man, with Joel Embiid, and it's not necessarily, I'm not going to, you know, go in on him, but when, as big as he is and as physical as he is, every play when you're undersized taking him on, it always looks gruesome. Like, it's like, Jesus, you're on the brute squad. You are the brute squad. Like, it's a brutal scenario. So all those things are playing themselves out in here. And then you just get firepower from the perimeter from both teams. At one point, both squads were shooting over 60% in this game. So it was just, to your point, a lot of fireworks, a lot of entertainment value. And then even down to the closing moments, like the closing stretch of this was critical shots. We'll get into the specific players who really stepped up in this one for Brooklyn. I think, you know, what it came down to was just about a critical stop, a critical inbounds play. And ultimately for the Nets, it's funny, in a game like this with all the points, it was like, maybe just one or two turnovers you'd like to have back. Oh, maybe a little less foul trouble at certain points. But by and large, man, it was just a phenomenal game to watch. And I was happy as well, because I'll go long here. I was happy as well because there was a point where I was like, down 15, don't know, you know, maybe time to turn out the lights here. And the Nets battled back. And without Kevin Durant again, that's as important as anything the Nets can accomplish in games like these, is not being a team that gets put away by one of the best in the East in the 76ers.
Yeah, I think what you have here, I think what this game really speaks to, and it speaks to like sort of everything that was happening both on the court and whatever went on in an extracurricular sense, is that what's happened here because of all the storylines, and this is good for the game, by the way, like this is good for Nets fans, and this is that we have a rivalry. Like, this is an actual rivalry. Now, neither of these teams have won anything, which is usually what you usually want to get when you have a rivalry. But once you don't have that, once you go to the next step beyond, what you want are storylines behind these two teams. And this team, these two teams have so many threads between them that it just makes for good drama. Like, even if it's chippy and even if it seems like sort of even child, like borderline childish at times, which it does, the stuff that is going on here is fun. Like, you obviously have we don't need to go through all these things, but you have the Simmons piece, which is that is a still lingering thing in Philly. The crowd was all over him, although not as bad to begin. They got themselves lathered as the game went on. It wasn't as bad with that early as I thought it would be. So you obviously have the Simmons thing. You mentioned the Harden, the passing shots about this is the closest to win a championship. I mean, they were like two series away from easily winning the championship when he was the Nets, but we need not remember those times. That doesn't matter. You have the Seth Curry, Doc Rivers piece, which the announcers can't help themselves every single time. Yeah, we know he's a son-in-law. Like, we get it. Like, it's awesome.
Yep. They will see each other. Yes, it's true.
You have Durant and Embiid, who at least from a basketball sense, don't like each other. I mean, like, when they're on the court together, whether they get along off the court, I think a lot of these things tend to have a different life off the court than on. And so I think that's fine with him and Trez too. Like, there's so many things that are going on here.
Claxton as a player in the league, right? That I think brought a different dynamic to this game than other times when we've seen them, because Claxton wasn't this player, right? And now all of a sudden, like, he has a confidence to his game. And by the way, he seems to be comfortable getting into it with dudes.
He was so completely there for it. Yeah. He was completely there for the whole piece. Well, I want to get into Claxton like more specifically here in a second, but finally, you kind of have a built-in rivalry against a lot of teams, or a lot, at least their fan bases, because every fan base hates Kyrie. So, like, once you add that final thing, it's like
little Kyrie across the top.
Oh yeah, every fan base absolutely hates the guy. So once you add all these things in, you do get like, I would love for these two teams to meet in the playoffs.
Yes.
Like, this would be awesome. Two fully healthy between the Sixers and the Nets. If they were to actually find a way to meet in the playoffs, whether it be the first round, because that's just how the seeding is going to shake out, which there's a real world for it, or like a second round matchup, however it can happen, I feel like they have to make it happen. Like, this is a really budding storyline, at least for the NBA, because there's just too many threads to pull on with all of it that has gone on. And it's actually for the NBA really rare to have it always work out like this. But somehow these two teams have just been linked now for multiple seasons.
So it's funny too, because coming up here in a second, we're going to talk about the reason why in the third and fourth quarters, the Nets were able to continue to claw their way back into this game and really take it down to the wire, looking at the performances of Claxton in the overall game. But Seth Curry in the second half of this one played a huge role. And I'll even paint a little bit of a picture that taps in to Doug Norrie's sentiment around wanting to see this and maybe other teams come playoff time.
All right. We told you at the top, we've got a new sports book on here. The NFL playoffs are here. We're really excited. Our new sports betting partner for Locked On is the number one sports book in America. That is FanDuel. If you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. We got a great deal for you. There's so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers of FanDuel, join today to get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. That's $150 in free bets for a $5 bet. You just have to sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn, just like our podcast network. FanDuel has all your favorite bets, from the money line, the point spreads, the player props. Right now, going into tomorrow, Nets -9 over our friends at FanDuel. I like the way that looks already. Plus, you can even combine your bets for a chance to win at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. That's where you put a bunch of different pieces from the same game into one. Right now, -2.5 for the Eagles over the 49ers. Philly, I'm kind of anti-Philly after this game, so I'm just going to go 49ers +2.5. That just feels good. It feels better that way, because I can't think about any scenario, especially on FanDuel, where I'm doing anything where I have to cheer for something that happens in Philadelphia. That is just some of what you're going to get over at our friends on FanDuel, an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Football fans, basketball fans too, don't miss out. Place your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL.
Okay. So before we tap into the performance from Seth Curry, which was critical in the Nets' attempt to come back in this one, I will just say, you want to paint a picture. Remember, like, there also have been moments with Giannis and the Bucks for these Brooklyn Nets. So when you talk about going to the playoffs, not to get over our skis about it, but it's like, yeah, man, this version of this team with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons and the emergence of Nicholas Claxton, like, there's a real world scenario where they're checking like revenge tour kind of boxes for themselves when it comes to wanting to get to that ultimate goal, whatever it's going to look like. But inside of this game, in the first half, the Brooklyn Nets, it really was the second quarter, they lost it by 10, and that's what set up the deficit in the third. You want to start with Claxton or Curry, because Curry's the fireworks that gets you back across the line here and makes it interesting. But I think without Nicholas Claxton in this game, you might as well have lost by 160, because he was the only thing on both ends of the floor that seemed to play from tip one to the final buzzer with consistency for Brooklyn.
Yeah, so let's start with Claxton, because this actually is important. It's an important
25 points. Sort of, sorry,
what's that?
25 well, points.
Okay, so the knock on Claxton up until this point, or the knock on the Nets' decision, let's put it this way, the knock on the Nets' decision to have Nick Claxton as their starting center was specifically around the matchups like this,
yep.
Right? Like, this is the exact scenario. The big, offensive-minded, tough down low center who can just cause you all kinds of problems. Now, there are very few of them in the league, but Embiid is one of them, right? Like, and like these all-star, higher, all-NBA type centers that are going to be on the court when the playoffs come and are really, really hard to handle. Embiid is that example. I think we saw from tonight, and this has been a slow build with Claxton that's been happening now for basically the whole season, is that with him, we are starting to see more and more that is Joel Embiid the better center? I mean, obviously that's not a take, but can Claxton stay on the court with him for long periods of time, especially in the right defensive setups? They went to zone a lot in this one.
Yep.
Is he able to handle his switch assignments and also not get completely run over on the inside? The answer to that is yes. Like, he was able to hang with Embiid here. He caused them real problems. And the absolute key for Claxton is that not only did it, Claxton believes he can do it. Like, that's where, and that is the thing. This is the metamorphosis we've seen from Claxton over the course of the season. It's not just a growth in his game. The game has grown by leaps and bounds. He seems to, at this point, do something new every game. That it's just like, that today was like the Euro step through the lane on a defender that thought they could just stand there.
And an offhand layup.
Taking it to the offhand layup, taking it to the rack from above the break when they just decide that they're not going to guard him. Eventually, we're going to see him take a three in that situation. But the key is, and like I said before, this is the most important thing. He believes now that he is good enough to stay on the court with any of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to believe that with the skill set he has, they just have something so special here. So Embiid got his numbers. The Sixers put up 137. I get it. Like, Embiid's still the better player. The knock was, would we have a center that could hang with guys like this? The answer is yes.
And in some of those instances, you're talking about him around the basket. He was doing it against Joel Embiid, right? He was succeeding
yes.
offensively against Joel Embiid, which, so usually when you think about this matchup, so much of it is about on the defensive end, right? Because of the size and how it's going to be a struggle. Listen, he had 5 fouls in this game, but he managed his way through it.
Dude,
but,
can I cut you off?
Yeah.
38 minutes when your primary assignment is Joel Embiid, yep. and to not foul out is an absolute W. Like, if Embiid plays 35 minutes, scores 26 points, and you play basically 1-to-1 on his minutes, it wasn't the whole time, and you don't foul the game, you win. Yep. that's all, you don't win, but it's like all you can have. It's really all you can ask for in a matchup like that.
And so I thought it really mattered on both ends of the floor. And just to, you know, kind of round it out here, over the time that Kevin Durant's been out, before the Phoenix game, which I think might have been, if not the Utah, he pulled the trigger on one triple in one of those games. So that little something there, along with that mid-range jumper that he threw in as well, is the sample size we're talking about building on. 20 points, 20 points, 24 points, 25 points. He hadn't had 20 points in a game all season long. Now, Is it going to look different when Kevin Durant comes back and where the offensive workload goes? Sure. But the fact that he's the other part of this inside of this game and the last couple is the fact that he's able to operate inside the paint when Kevin Durant isn't on the court right now. That's another really big step for him, too, and an indication that he can turn, face the basket, make a move, and attack downhill. Because unless you're going to be able to have that when Kevin Durant comes back, we talk about the third scorer. Is he a pure? He's not a pure scorer. I can only see his stats potentially getting better because of the spacing and opportunity he's going to have when Kevin Durant comes back. So it's a good game from him, a great game from him. And to your point, staying on the court with him really matters with Embiid. Yeah, yeah.
And last thing on that, he took the third most shots on the team in this game and was 11 for 12. I mean, like, I just don't, there's literally nothing else you can ask of the guy, right? Like yeah, that's,
no.
He was literally as efficient as possible. I mean, 3 for 6 from the foul line, but yeah, anyway, that's my final thing. It's like he took the third most shots, he played a ton of minutes, and he was great. We've been beating the Claxton drum all game or all season, waiting for matchups like this to kind of see how it would go. And it went fine.
Yep.
Like, yeah. That's all you can ask.
100%. They talked about it on the broadcast, on the Nets broadcast anyway, where we had mentioned, and this very quickly, on a guy like De'Ron Sharpe. It's like, oh, this is where you try to throw a body at a guy, and he was out for this game, and you saw a little bit Markieff Morris, et cetera. So it's just interesting that he was also able to do it when you really didn't have a backstop behind you that you could turn to if he was going to get into trouble. And by the way, he picked up an early technical in this game and still kept his cool and didn't get another one and potentially get kicked out of this game. So he's playing with an edge, but also playing smart. The other guy then that we need to highlight here is, of course, going to be, and I had the box score up and I'm like, you know, I don't see, where is Seth Curry? Oh, that's right. He came off the bench, 11 to 20 from the field, 7 to 10 from deep. 32 points, and the bulk of that damage is getting done down the stretch in this game when, again, it was this isn't a knock on Kyrie. It was a quiet 30 points from him, got to the line 11 times, knocked down 10 of them. But this is the old, when you look at it, if you want to remember Montrezl Harrell, head of the snake is Kyrie Irving, and you saw him getting bottled up. You saw them paying the attention of making it difficult for him to get his. So he had to be able to rely on someone else. Seth Curry, a guy who I'll admit, when we talked about who's going to be able to step up, there were a couple of games here where I was saying, you know, yeah, you'd like him to be the guy that has the on-ball skills, but I'm just not seeing it. In this game, along with the perimeter shooting, though, he was taking on the defensive assignments on the offensive end and saying, I can work a couple of moves here, get myself a bit of space, knock down critical shots. Without him, this game is another key element that without which the Nets are getting blown out in this game. I thought it was a really big performance from Seth Curry and a nice reminder that he can get you there in some big moments like this and a bit of a homecoming. He played, obviously, with Philly as well.
Yeah, 7 for 10 from three. Not going to happen every night. Takes the most shots on the team, kind of like by far. He had 20 shots and Kyrie only had 15.
Yep.
Shows you that, you know, there are certain situations in this time without Durant where if they can get a guy like almost like specifically Seth going, that's like the one other way they can hang in games if Kyrie isn't a high usage guy and super efficient. And because he can score three levels, like he can get into the mid range. And like, even the announcers, I think sometimes people don't realize this, but they kind of said like, oh, you know, he's take a two pointer. That's rare. Like Curry takes a lot of two pointers. Like yeah. He pulls up in the mid range. He's an elite mid range scorer when he can get the right matchups. People tend to kind of only think about him as a three-point shooter. I mean, specifically people outside of Nets world. I think Nets folks know at this point that there's more to his game than just spot-up shooting. That's very clear. But it's still you can hear from national broadcast that it's not clear to everybody else.
Right, they're surprised by it more often than not when he does it.
Well, double his shots were two-pointers. Like, he took 20 shots. He took 10 threes. I mean, that's super high usage, but it's not like he was just bombing threes the whole game. Like, he's getting into his dribble and getting into defenders. And this is the other path to victory for the Nets. Is like, I know they didn't win the game. Like, I'm very clear about this, but like, obviously. But like, the weird reason they're able to stick in this game specifically is because he goes flamethrower. And if those are going to be the scenarios, that's how you can hang with. Like, the Sixers are a really good team. This is a fully healthy Sixer team that thinks they can win the championship. Right? Like, this version of them thinks they can win the championship. The Nets hung with him, and Curry was a big reason.
Coming up here in a second, then, we'll give one more tip of a cap to a player that tried to get himself back on the right track in this game, and I thought he did so in a big way. And then we'll turn our attention to Ben Simmons and to his inconsistent performance in this game, which gives you the entire spectrum of the Ben Simmons experience.
All right, Nets fans, we got to tell you about the best Cali Mexican food in the Brooklyn area. We're saying this from personal experience. If you have not tried Brooklyn Borough either before or after a Nets game. You need to next time you are in the area. It's just under a mile from Barclays. Brooklyn Borough's delicious aromas, hearty taste, it draws you in. They got an awesome original San Francisco Mission District burritos. They're off the charts. We tried these specifically. This is like the easiest read we'll ever do. If you're in Brooklyn, you have to go to Brooklyn Borough. Killer taco, tacos, bowls, quesadillas. Really, the menu is almost too big for like the space that they're able to display it. There's so many awesome options. You head down. It's on 922 Fulton Street. We've been there. We've met with the owner. Pepe is a great dude. The fresh meat's prepped. It's seasoned. It's grilled to perfection. They got the salsa bar, which you can't leave without. You also can't live without. Cervezas, tasty margaritas are there as well, buddy. I mean, how easy is this read over at Brooklyn Borough? We're going to tell you about what you get with it.
Yeah, this is the old ad read inside of the ad read where we went there. You said met with Pepe, hearing his story and kind of the way he built up. It legitimately made me think about like, yeah, starting the podcast, trying to get some reps, trying to like build up your reputation. He did it the same way before he has this great backyard kind of area behind the shop that we sat with, talked with him, had the Joey Buckets tacos, which was like, dude, that poblano stuffed with cheese. Like I stopped mid-conversation. I was like, what am I eating? Because it was good, man. It is easy because it was delicious. The salsas were great. You want some like real heat and some like homemade salsas. They were all delicious too. No, it was incredible, man. And it was a blast to get to know them and just to see the shop and see what they're working with there. And it's so close that, man, I don't know, man. I'd be eating there all the time if I didn't feel like I'd just be packing it on.
All right, here's what you do. 922 Fulton Street in Brooklyn. Locked On Nets fans get a free baby burrito with purchase of a Mission Burrito. All you have to do, you go into Brooklyn Borough, you just tell them you're a Locked On Nets fan when ordering. That's all you do. Say Locked On Nets. When you order, you're going to get a free baby burrito with the purchase of a Mission Burrito. The offer is valid until KD returns. So make sure you get in there. 922 Fulton Street, Brooklyn Borough. Order, unwrap, enjoy, unwrap more, finish, come back, and smile. 922 Fulton Street in Brooklyn, Brooklyn Borough.
Pepe. All right. So the other thing is I wanted to give a quick tip of the hat in a game like this because a guy that's been struggling of late has been Yuta Watanabe. And this is a game where specifically in the first half of it, you're thinking about some of the length that Philadelphia has across a lot of positions, some more difficult defensive assignments, a Tobias Harris, et cetera. I thought that Yuta Watanabe did a nice job for himself in 25 minutes, 4-7 from the field, gave you 11 points, the 4 rebounds. He had that really nice inbound play. It was Royce O'Neal inbounding late, had the great cut to the basket where, frankly, Philadelphia mixed some signals on their assignment, but laid that up and in. I think if we think about other guys just to kind of tip the hat with, it's funny. You have Yuta Watanabe, who in a big game against a difficult team showed that, okay, I can step up in some of these spots. And then if I flip the script, I was a little disappointed. I thought there'd be more TJ Warren in this game. Didn't get a lot of him. And then this is a brutal game for Joe Harris, and it's going to be a difficult one. I want to stay as positive as I can for as long as I can, but I think Yuta is the last like real signal you put out here inside of this game where you thought that he played exceptionally well, obviously before we get to Ben Simmons. But was anyone else that jumped out at you? Because Harris foul out one was just – that was going to be brutal. We knew this matchup was going to be bad for him.
Yeah, the length for Yuta is going to help him here. I will say Warren got played off the court early because Harden basically just called him out in a switch for like 5 straight possessions and then cooked him, and that was basically the end of that. So I think you're going to – if you have a ball handler, especially in the switching situation like this, that's going to be able to just kind of signal who they want to be able to take on, that's kind of the end of it. And so I think that was Warren. Before we get out of here, let's just talk about Simmons though, because the Simmons thing – okay, I will say – on the positive side, this was a tale of two halves for him. He was a completely different guy in the second half than the first half. So I don't know like where to land here, because if we did the podcast after the first half, I mean, the first half was awful. Like it was so bad. I mean, to the point where
we've seen him, right?
I don't even mean awful. I mean, it was like hard to watch. He had at least 3 balls where he was within 2 feet of the basket where he didn't even bother looking at the basket. He was, it was a ticking time bomb to get out of his hands. He threw one like sort of a behind the back to Yuta in the corner, and he did 2 other toss outs. But then the second half,
it's just the third quarter, by the way. He scored all 12 of those points in the third quarter.
And third quarter, he comes out.
Yeah, go ahead.
God, he's taken at the rim. I'll finish off here, but he's taken at the rim. He's trying to get shots. He's Euro stepping guys in the lane. Like he's trying to blow past people. He's going baby hook up and over and beat. Like He's doing all the things that you want to see him just do all the time. You don't honestly care if he misses. Just do it. So and then he's gone for the fourth because you can't play him because of the foul shooting and like sort of like the dumb fouls at times. I don't know, man. This is like such a confusing game. It really kind of depends. With Simmons here, if you only watch the game in parts, you could have three completely separate opinions about this game for Simmons, depending on when you tuned into it.
Here's what I'm going to say is that, so there's two things that happened in the third quarter. Seth Curry sets him up on an alley-oop, slams it down, like just a really good energy moment for him. And then late stages, he gets it, takes it coast to coast, gets the and one, takes the body bump and gets it, you know, gets it off glass and in and goes to the line. Like that, those two things there just symbolically on the dunk, but the coast to coast and the aggression, it was almost like, hey, if you just turn this dude's brain off and you say, we've only got 5 seconds, he doesn't have enough time to think about how he doesn't want to be in a spot where he has to do something that he doesn't feel comfortable with. There's that part of it. I'm going to go like high level on this though. And this is a big matchup and it's a difficult one, but now we've established that Nicholas Claxton for the most part was taking on the Joel Embiid assignment and surviving it. He's also the guy in the offensive end that you're relying on to be able to attack and get at the basket. There has to come a point here when Kevin Durant comes back, that when we talked about this before, take away the money, take away what he once was. You have to start labeling Ben Simmons as a ball handling, facilitating, defensive minded player. And you have to use him and put him into the lineup accordingly. Because if they don't make that adjustment, like there is a world where a different version of this lineup, especially in the first half, makes this game go a different way. He still has tremendous defensive value, but you cannot live with this level of passivity on the offensive end with such consistency. And by the way, he can lock dudes up defensively, but it's not like he's not first ballot Hall of Fame defensive this year. He still has difficulty. I think he's still timid around the foul selection sometimes. I'm very curious to see what the Nets do getting Kevin Durant back. Because I don't think, we talked about Ben Simmons at his highest possible level with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, that's championship potential. Without him at the highest level and now Nicholas Claxton, well, it's deep playoff run, but not something else. I think we may need to move away from this idea of what he has to be and trying to continue to go for it, because you're probably forgoing figuring out a better solution when you sacrifice as many minutes as you do to him and in this specific role. Too many offensive possessions look like total garbage, and it's predicated on no one anticipating that Ben Simmons is going to get that close to the basket and then say, not for me, man, and try to end up needing to get bailed out. It was very frustrating. In an overall positive game, it was a very frustrating first half watching him.
Yeah, like I said, if we did the podcast at the end of the first half, it would have been the lowest I've been on Simmons. It'd be the lowest I was on him all season. And it wouldn't have been close. I've gone through sort of the ringer with him about feeling different ways we're cheering for him hard. Like we want to see him play like he played in this third quarter, where he's aggressive and wants to get to the rim. And if he misses, he misses. Like, who cares? Because it just has to happen. Because you know, it's funny. Like in the first half, it was one of these things where, when you do something so little, the times you do it become completely accentuated. So like when he shoots so little, the times he does shoot become these huge things, right? Like it's like, oh my God, he finally shot. And then if it's a miss, it's even worse. We saw in the third quarter when he was trying to shoot more and get into the basket, like the misses mattered less because there was more of a volume around doing it. Like that has to be how he operates every single game, so that every shot doesn't seem like this like game turning moment for him. Yeah. And I think that like volume does it, and you just can't get better. I don't know. So
and here's my point. I think my point too, is I'm saying in a frustrating way, and I think my point is too, is like, take what he does well and treat that. How would you use that skill set on your roster? Not how you would use what he could be, because then he actually can be the most effective version of himself. And it is not, I don't think, at least up to this point, it's not this role. Because you can't have the inconsistencies like you see on a game-to-game basis. And we can all see it. Picture down the stretch. Picture a playoff round. Can't have him in the fourth quarter. He's great in the first quarter and then disappears for the entire second quarter. Sure, Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving can pick that up. But I think the reliability is what we talk so much about with this roster. And right now, he just doesn't have it. So hopefully, the third quarter is a spark for him. And he did keep himself balanced, right? He did take some of the aggression, the foul calls. There were a lot of things that went on in this game that I thought he did a nice job staying level-headed around. So
yeah, like the tech was totally BS.
Yep.
Like,
and he was good. He smiled, stayed away from it all. So I thought he held himself very good in Philadelphia on that, you know, that kind of matchup, but I don't know.
Yeah, like I said, I think that the third quarter at least swung it back around. I know what you're saying. You're saying that like the expectations need to be recalibrated. I think that you're probably correct on that. But I just don't think they can be. So and that's like the other part of that's hard. Like I think, yes, on some level, you want to be able to set a new baseline for what the expectation level is for him. And at the other hand, you just can't. I just that's just not how it works. You just can't. There can't. When you know that there's this other piece of his game that exists and it just doesn't happen for long stretches. Like you can't just forget about it. And so I think
I think he should be in the bench unit. If it keeps going like this, then he should be in the bench unit when Kevin Durant comes back. Cause it just makes more sense. You surround him with a Seth Curry and some other shooters and let him try to go, but you need to have reliability in the starting lineup.
Just looking up we're going to get out of here in a second. Say something, vamp for like 2 seconds. I'm going to get these on court numbers. I know
you
I should have
believed it. Yeah, I know. And by the way, because some of the things and I know there was a sample size here too, where over certain stretches, he was the only guy that was having success. And he was some of the, you know, one of the few players that was in a high plus minus when we talked about certain games like this. So
okay,
there's that weird part about balancing what he does defensively and what feels weird offensively. But let's see, maybe it's turned the other way.
Okay, so 294 minutes this season will end on this. Kevin Durant, and this is why you always have to do the final evaluation of something when Kevin Durant's back on the court. Yep. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, Nick Claxton, 294 minutes, 122.78 offensive rating, 112.84 defensive rating, plus 9.94 net rating. One of the better numbers you will see over a 300-minute stretch. So,
does that include Claxton or no?
That was Claxton too. It was all four of them.
Yeah. I wonder if that'd be the hair splitting thing, right?
No, it's all four of those guys together.
I know, but take like if we isolate Claxton, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie, and the numbers still look the same, then it becomes an interesting conversation.
Well, it's not going to help you here, buddy. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Nick Claxton, -104.
Really?
So there you go. Yeah. Yeah. So right. You're wrong about everything, and I'm right about everything. There we go. And that's how. All right, we're going to get out of here. Appreciate everyone that's jumped into YouTube. We'll do a few extra minutes on YouTube as bonus, as we always do. If you are listening on the podcast, make sure you subscribe to YouTube because the podcast is going to end, but YouTube will continue on. Subscribe to Locks on Nets over at YouTube.
It's not about what I want. It's about what's fair. Harvey Dent, Two-Face. You see, it's like the two sides of Ben Simmons. You see what I did there, Doug?
Which version of Harvey Dent? Or is that just like from the comic books?
That's from The Dark Knight. No, we go Dark Knight.
Oh, Dark Knight. Okay. Yeah, what's his name? I can't remember his name now. That's a good one, though. All right. One of the all-time. There we go. One of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.